right. So we've got State Senator Tony Wong with us.
The one and only.
Yes. Tony, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. Great to hear both of you.
Well, you sound like you're in a gymnasium. We got a big echo where you are.
Well, I'm in a big old room, empty, early in the morning.
Well, for you it is.
I tell you, you're out there all the time.
Well, it's always great to be on with you guys.
So listen, we talked, was it last week or the week before with House Deputy Minority Leader, Vinnie Candelora, about this grocery tax. And we had like three pages of new
unreal
prepared food items, and it's up to five muffins or bagels or donuts that are taxed, and then when you go six or more, then they're not taxed. And yeah, you almost need a chart to carry along with you. However, Senator, over the last day or two, we've been hearing that Governor Ned Lamont has been doing a little bit of backpedaling. What is the status going into October 1st, which is only a week away, regarding this grocery tax?
Well, the taxpayers did get a short-term reprieve last week.
Yeah.
The governor, in a room with the DRS, the Revenue Commissioner, and Democratic leaders, in a closed room, decided to reinterpret the law and made the decision that these prepared foods that were in grocery stores and these goods that we had in the grocery stores that were going to be taxed, that were never taxed previously, they retreated. And they said, we misinterpreted, we're now reinterpreting it. But you know what it showed me in this is, it's not a solution. It's a pause.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because statutorily, the name, the term grocery store is still in the Democratic Lamont budget. That being said, we need to go back in and change the law. But unfortunately, whether it's for reasons of embarrassment, whether they didn't read the budget, or they try to pull the wool over people's eyes, they don't want, the Democrats do not want another session to go in to fix it. And I think that's unfortunate because we've created so much chaos and confusion for consumers, but also for these businesses that had to spend money, change their taxing system, and opens themselves up to potential liability for not reporting certain things according to the revenue services definition.
Right.
So it's another example of where this whole process of how this budget, when it began, that was done behind closed doors, Gary. You know that.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
It's you don't get feedback from people. You don't get transparency. Six people sit in a room, the governor, the budget director, and the Democratic leaders formulated a budget that they envisioned and then roll it out less than 24 hours in 600 plus pages and say, vote yes or no. And that's sad. But what you see in that process, a broken process, is the fact you're going to see holes, you're going to see mistakes, and it's coming out with each passing day, and it is the taxpayers and the people who have to go on with their lives get disrupted by this chaos and confusion.
All right, Senator, a couple of things. Number one, in my opinion and in my experience, in fact, you and I, we've been on committees together. We're on housing. We were on aging together. So by my experience, I think the reason why the majority Democrats do not want to call a special session to rewrite the language to this bill is because, in a way, it admits that they got it wrong in the first place. But that's just my opinion.
Well, you know what? We have a responsibility as lawmakers representing the people.
Oh.
And look, nobody's perfect, Brad and Gary, but listen to this. Remember last year in a bipartisan budget, we made the mistake of making cuts to the Medicare savings
program? That's right.
Program.
And we had to call a special session for that. Big time.
We made the mistake. We heard the feedback. Well-intentioned, but it was a mistake. We went back in.
That's right.
Legislative session. addressed the issue, corrected it, and legally changed the law in a transparent legislative process. That's exactly right. I think the Democrats and the governor don't want to call the session because it would show that whoever voted for this obviously didn't understand it, didn't read it, or they were trying to put a grocery tax on our consumers. Whatever the reason, there is no transparency if we don't have a session to address it.
And by the way, it was you and I, Senator Kelly, Kevin Kelly, and even Representative and Chairman Sarah, that led that charge for the Medicare Savings Program to call that special session. But I want to go to something else, and this is the slippery slope that that this bill is. Okay, so the commissioner of DRS, Department of Revenue Services, say that they're not going to interpret it, the bill, in a way that would cause, that would inflict this monetary or financial harm on the Connecticut, on the Connecticut citizens or the people who are buying from these grocery stores. So it's almost like a verbal promise, but by not going in to special session to actually change the language, opens up the possibility that down the road, maybe say after the new year, if they would like to raise more revenue, because it's not in statute, they can go back and say, well, you know what, we're going to go back and reinterpret the language to this bill how we originally intended it, how we originally thought it was.
Absolutely. And Brad, you have such a long history in this state. We continue to do this over and over again in the legislature, and that's why people don't trust the state government with their hard-earned tax dollars. The bottom line is, you go in one thing, it comes out another.
Yeah.
The sweeping of the money is remarkable. And that's where, you know, and they go into the back room, they make decisions, and this is chaos. But unfortunately, it's business as usual in the current system that we have. And it's a struggle. And the people get hurt. And when you put it not only in this issue as a grocery tax, and people need to remember that in the winter of last year, when Governor Lamont first started office, it was floated a 2% grocery tax. So this grocery tax wasn't a mistake, and it came out of nowhere.
Right.
And it is explicitly written into the budget to include that statute section of grocery stores. So, listen, there was no mistake, and that's why people don't trust what to do with their money. And it goes on to for grocery taxes. It goes in for you know, tolls. This is a bad precedent on bad government.
I mean, we heard the toll bill for years. I mean, even my first year in the legislature, we heard that. And I remember hearing taxes on sugary drinks and so on and so forth. But prepared foods in a grocery store, I mean, where in the world? Who does that? What state does this?
Well, you know, they want the money. They need the money. We have a budget that was the most regressive.
Yes.
And increased taxes on hardworking people. You know, I called it out in the Senate chambers during the budget debate. I called this budget the most regressive tax budget that I have ever voted on in my 10 plus years. That being said, it represented the wealthy. It represented the well-connected, and it represented bigger government. That's what this budget is all about. Well, it's hurting the middle class and hardworking people.
Tony, the governor will say, though, that it levels the playing field, because if you go to a restaurant and you're getting a hot meal that can be instantly consumed, the grocery stores are now kind of encroaching into that field, into that arena, if you will, by offering prepared foods. So if one is taxed at a certain percentage, the governor says, well, shouldn't the other, to level the playing field, also be taxed at that same amount? What is your opinion of that?
Well, I think it's misleading, and it's a false explanation, because you initially proposed a 2% grocery tax in the beginning of the year. So that was your thinking along the way. Now you're using this as a prepared food. But the fact is, you are hurting working class people. And to answer that second question is, you shouldn't be putting that additional 1% on a restaurant.
That's right. That's right.
Again,
I agree.
Yep. It's another tax.
Yeah, you're right.
And for working people to grab a quick meal for families that are hurried, it's another tax. You want to talk about another tax? The fact that you're going to charge an extra $100 for anyone that's going to trade their car in, it serves no value to the service that it provides. It's another money grab of going into the general fund. Again, we're going to hurt and cut people by a thousand cuts. And that's what this budget's all about. And it's going to start coming out every digital download of a Netflix movie now. Boom, your Amazon movies. Boom, you're going to get taxed. It seems like we're taxing people along with proposals of raising minimum wage. You know, it's just untenable that people feel as though government doesn't listen to them and doesn't respect their hard-earned dollars and spend it far too easily.
You know, this is something that is just going on and on and on. This is Brad. And it's something that just infuriates me, because the people that are getting hurt are the folks that are working, raising children, trying to make some money, trying to get by. And this is what's going on, and it just never stops. I think it's got to stop. We've got to change, and we've got to take some chances.
Well, we have to respect people's hard-earned dollars, Brad and Brian. The fact is, our budget continues to increase spending. We don't prioritize our spendings. We do not recognize the most important aspect is providing safety nets to ensure government works and public safety. But instead, we have so much heavy weight of government bureaucracy, and the weight keeps growing and growing. And unfortunately, it's hurting taxpayers and hardworking people, like you all said. And who's speaking for them?
Yeah.
Who's speaking for them?
You're supposed, but when will the people say enough is enough?
Well, I think,
how does it end?
I think when you start hurting people, when
they
you
are.
Talk about, you know, Ryan, when we were, you know, I work in the legislature, we were just incredulous at health insurance cost and the increased cost of being able to live in Connecticut. Now with the raising of minimum wage and all the various well-intended policies that comes at a significant cost, how can people create businesses?
Yeah.
And the fact is, when you don't have businesses and the ability to grow, people don't have jobs.
Yeah, I talk to members of chambers of commerce, and I talk to business owners who say, you know what, Gary, if I wasn't already in business, I wouldn't be starting my business right now. But, you know, I've been in business for 10 years or 50 or 20 years, and so, you know, I'm already established. But if I had to start from scratch in the way the business climate is presently in the state of Connecticut, I wouldn't even start it. I want to go back really quickly, though, Tony, if you don't mind, because we're running out of time. I got about 2 minutes here. To that $100 fee to trade in your car, do you think that can have a trickle-down effect where people will just... I mean, Connecticut's a small state. You just drive a few minutes and you'll... Within an hour, you can get to all three of our borders, border states. Do you think people will just go out of state and trade their car in there and hurt the car dealerships here within?
No, because I think it's just another little cost that they saddle you with.
Well, these little costs add up.
A purchase of a car, it's $10,000, $15,000, $20,000. Add another $100 in there, no one will notice. Okay. It's a little bit of money creep. But the problem is, you know, these little things may be the one that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah.
It's untenable. We got digital downloads. We got increases in various other taxes. Businesses get entity taxes. What for? There's no value to that other than a pure money grab to feed the insatiable black hole of irresponsible government spending.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. But you know what? I will say this. It's these little fees, $100 here, $20 there, $200 there, $50. It adds up. And when you accumulate that in 12 months' time, you sit there and go, oh, my goodness, these little fees have just added up to $2,500. So whatever you're getting, if you're on a fixed income or you're a working person, take take that. I just said that hypothetically. Take that $2,500 off the top, because that's less than you're getting that you're giving to your state government, who's probably redistributing it to something that you have no purpose for or don't even believe in. It's just egregious.
The financial burden on taxpayers is first and most critically pressing. But I think the other part is important is the process. People need to understand that the budgetary process and the way it's done, the spin cycle that goes on to say great things came out of it, there are good things. But when there are 10 things out of 100 bad things,
yeah,
it's not a good budget.
I would always...
And the transparency, the lack of transparency in this process, and the lack of trust that people have in what government does with their money, this is an example. And so when we have future policies, when legislators come to you and say, we need tolls, my issue and response to them is you have demonstrated no ability to respect and value the tax dollar.
You know, and you talk about that, you know, the budget bill where, you know, you hit the nail right on the head. You can have 100 items in there. 90 are terrible. They're not even bad. They're terrible. And 10 are actually very good. Well, but you have to vote. It's all on one bill. It's all in the one budget bill. So that means essentially that you could realistically, because you're voting in the, you know, with the 90% of that's bad, you're voting no on the budget. And that also means that you're voting no for the 10 good things that are in the bill. And of course, whoever your opponent is down the road will exploit that, and it makes you look like you've got to answer to your constituents when they email you, hey, you voted against this. It just takes extra time to relay that information. It was part of a terrible, terrible budget bill that I had to vote on the entire in the bill on its entirety, and 90% of it was bad. It's almost like they do this deliberately.
And the thing is, we can work together. As you know, in a bipartisan effort in the aging committee, we looked at removing Social Security and pension taxes on our seniors. That was done 3-4 years ago and was pushed through in a bipartisan budget last year when we had an 18-18 tie in the Senate.
That's right.
And so that actually got pushed through, and this year got codified. So when you work together, and not a one-party rule going into a back room, and you start getting feedback from people, when real democracy works, we produce good bills like this one. In this budget, we actually retained and kept tax credits and no longer taxing our seniors on pensions and Social Security. That was one thing we all worked really hard on, to listen and protect our seniors on fixed income. That is something we did last year. When there was a bipartisan budget, we need to go back and be honest and work together. One-party rule. Yeah. One-party rule does not work.
And it's been like that for 40 years.
Let me tell you something very, very brief. We've got to have a change. We've talked, and we've talked again. And people are getting sick and tired of it.
But they keep voting for the same people over and over again.
Same people over and over and over.
It's insanity.
Well, you know what? I'll start a petition. Brad Davis for governor. There you go.
Please. Senator Tony Wong, we really appreciate your time with us this morning.
It is my privilege, and it's always a treat to talk to both of you. Thank you for the great work that you do for our state.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate, always enjoyed working with you, Tony.
Thanks.
You got it, brother.